ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For a long time, I was very embarrassed afterwards because you're a teenage girl going to an all-girls school and you've decided to co-found a Star Trek club and you've dressed up like that for like, it's not that cool. It's very not.
I would have thought it was cool.
Thank you. This is Stop Everything, the show that makes you smarter about pop culture. I'm Beverly Wang, here as always to help you process all your big thoughts and big feelings about the pop culture that preoccupies you. And I am so delighted to welcome this episode's guest critic, Stephen Oliver. Stephen, how are you going?
I'm good, thank you, Beverly. How are you?
I'm really well. I'm so happy to have you on. This is a conversation I have actually waited to have with you for a long time. You probably don't know this.
It must be about Star Trek, then, not me.
It must be. Yes, exactly. You are a poet, a screenwriter, an actor, and you are such a distinct and recognizable voice and presence on screen. I feel like the moment people hear you talk, they know exactly who you are.
And they go, oh, that idiot again.
Oh, no way. But for the people in the back, let's run through some of the things you've been in, because the list is long and highly decorated. So in 2020, this is a documentary for NITV and SBS, Looky, Looky, Here Comes Cookie, that you wrote and featured in.
I'm Stephen Oliver, and you might recognise me because I'm sexy. But today, we're here to talk about something not so sexy, Captain James Cook.
So from the sexy to the non-sexy, quite a contrast.
It was, yes.
You are a poet and a powerful spoken word performer. And here's a bit of a performance you did on Q&A with a piece called An Acknowledgement Of.
We don't want to get close because we're told not to care. Looking out for yourself is what gets you somewhere. And then what the heck should we even be feeling? And does this feel right? Because it don't feel like healing. And so we stop short at the blame or the shame, not wanting to know how another feels pain.
That was a powerful snippet of a much longer piece, Stephen. What was the inspiration behind that poem?
I was asked once if I could write a spoken word piece for an event, asking for an acknowledgement. And so I wrote that piece. But when I wrote it, I had a feeling they wouldn't go for it because I mentioned blood and the cross in it. And so they rejected it and asked me if I could write it like a fluffier piece. So it was something that I held on to for years. And so I did that piece, and I'm glad because then it got like over 500,000 views.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought to the other event that turned it away going, that's what you get.
Yeah, it had a huge response online. Stephen, you're also part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You played Carlo in Taika Waititi's Thor Ragnarok, so that's pretty amazing. And also, you're a breakout star on, honestly, honest to goodness, one of my favorite ABC sketch comedy shows in past years, Black Comedy, and one half of the Tittas, along with your co-star, Aaron Faasso.
Can't even dance.
Can't even shop.
Well, what's this dance like?
I love them.
I just heard people who've never seen that listening to it going, what is that?
Okay, so what's happening is there is that you're in a supermarket, right?
Yes.
And these two titas, they have competition and sexual tension at the same time. Is that right?
Yes, it's a love-hate thing.
They're always running into each other, and then it becomes this kind of like, what's a sense slut, what's a sense slut, what's a sense slut. In that clip, they're racing through the supermarket with two trolleys, trying to shop faster than the other. That's just a Stephen Oliver tasting plate, right? There's so much more to you. Stephen Oliver, we're gathered here to venture into space, the final frontier.
These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Last time we spoke on Stop Everything, it was back in 2020, and you were on to talk about Fab Original, which is the art-based game show you hosted on SBS, right?
Yeah.
It was lockdown times, so we recorded via a video call from our homes. And I think those times, even though they were really hard in some ways, they were kind of interesting because, like, we got really intimate with each other. You know, all of a sudden, people were doing TV crosses and you could see into their homes, what was on their bookshelves and everything. And the thing that I remember is that all around you, I could see Star Trek The Next Generation souvenirs and memorabilia all around. Like, yeah. It was chock-a-block.
Had a bit of it.
And I just mentally noted that, and I was like, one day, I need to get Stephen Oliver back on to talk about this, because I am also like a child Star Trek The Next Generation fan, and I'm going to share a little bit of my fandom with you soon, but I want to start with you. I mean, how did it begin? How did you get all those mobiles and things that you had on display in your home that time we met up on the video call?
It was actually... Well, I used to work in West End. There was a newsagent around the corner that I used to go get comics and all that kind of stuff from. I noticed one day they were selling these magazines that came with the Star Trek ship model. So I started buying them. I ended up getting about 98 or something.
98? Paper
98.
Models.
But then I kind of realized, you know, because I'd been watching Star Trek at the same time, and I'm like, God, this is never going to end. There's always going to be new ships being built. I own all the movies. I own all the series on DVD, like Voyager, DS9, Next Generation, the original series, the animated series, Discovery, Picard.
That's deep.
I'm a bit of a nut.
Wow. Okay. So
Enterprise.
So how old were you when you discovered the world that Gene Roddenberry created, and why was it so appealing to you?
Well, I've always loved sci-fi fantasy, but I used to spend time up the road at extended family's places. Auntie Gladys. She kind of got the family into it. And so then when Star Trek was happening, like, every, I think it was like a Thursday night or something, I would go up and we would watch The Next Generation. And
we're
I loved
it. Next Gen. We're not messing with
Next Gen,
not the
original series.
No. Yeah, okay. Well, let's be very clear.
Next Gen. Yeah, yeah. TGM.
I'm similar to you. As a kid, I think I saw the original series and it just did not appeal to me. I think it looked dated to me. But Next Gen, it kind of found me at a place. You know, we didn't have internet then, kids. We just had what was ever on the TV. And Next Gen happened to be on TV, like, at the time, maybe dinner time or something. And we were a family that had a TV in the kitchen. We watched TV while we ate dinner. No shame, that's what we did. Reruns were playing on a nightly basis. And then on a weekly basis, at another set time, new episodes were coming out. And me and my sister got really into it. And Stephen, can I share with you a little bit of my fandom?
Of course you can.
I've actually never talked about this openly in any kind of broadcast space before, because I think as a teenager, I was made to feel kind of embarrassed about it. And even though I host a pop culture show and I say all the time we shouldn't be embarrassed about what we love, there is still that residual bit of me that holds on to that. So I feel like I'm breaking the seal today, but I feel like it's nice to do this together. I was given a cassette tape on how to learn Klingon for a birthday gift. I had one of the companion books that was all of the episodes from seasons 1 to 4 that had diagrams of the ships and also about, like, the uniforms. I decided one Halloween that I would make my own Geordi LaForge costume. So I had, like, a black mock turtleneck. And then I went to this fabric store and found some mustard fabric, and I cut it at the shape, and I sewed it to the front.
Oh, that's cool.
And I had a gold banana clip that I clipped over my eyes with a piece of elastic at the back. And then, Stephen, I also, with my friends who were really into Star Trek, we decided at our all-girls school that we would lobby to, lobby to create a Star Trek club at my school, okay?
This
is like
cool.
Early high school. And we performed skits on stage. I played Commander Worf in a skit on stage. And I was going through some stuff yesterday, Stephen, and I found... We're on a video call, okay, in the studio. I found this grade 8 math project that I had made, and it's just like a math project about, I think, how to do quadratic equations or something.
Wow.
It's called
That's amazing.
Worf Goes Domestic. Worf needed to make 12 portions of bloodbath for a dinner party he was giving. And I've got these collector cards.
Wow.
Scotch tape to the dot matrix printout. Okay.
Have you still got those collector cards? I've just got these two.
I don't know where the other ones are. And then Steve and I actually have the newspaper where I was on the cover.
Is that the school paper?
That's the school paper. And that's me. Yep. These are all like dear friends here.
Yeah.
And it says the school name. It says Trix Onward. And it's an article about us. So I've just brought a little bit of evidence to kind of share with you.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's why when I saw all those ships in the background at your house on that video call, I was like, what the heck is going on? I need to talk to this guy.
Can I say that if I was Gene Roddenberry, well, me being like a creator of a show, if I saw teenagers doing something like that for something I'd created, I would have absolutely loved that.
Yeah, right?
It's one thing when I have adults come up to me and share stories and stuff like that, but when you have teenagers, funny enough, I just left the ABC studios in Sydney. I had a young boy come up to me, but he made me laugh because he went, oh, my God, I'm so fangirling right now, oh, my God. And then he goes, I'm from Kempsey, and I just wanted to say thank you because there was a lot of, like, racial tension and stuff and that at our school between non-Indigenous and Indigenous students. And he said, and when black comedy came out, you just gave us something to talk about and we were all talking about it. And, like, stuff like that is really
beautiful. That's beautiful. How did that make you feel?
I try not to get emotional when I talk about that kind of stuff. You know, and I think I get emotional because you see a lot of crap in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't feel that what you do is actually doing anything. And so when you have moments like that, it's, yeah.
It reminds you why you do the stuff.
Exactly.
And that you're connecting with stuff. Because I think sometimes when you're making something in a closed environment, you sort of even forget that people will hear or listen or see it, right? You just focus on the creation part of it. And then it goes out in the world and people come up to you and they say that kind of stuff and it's a really beautiful thing. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
So Star Trek. For a long time, I was very embarrassed afterwards because you're a teenage girl going to an all-girls school and you've decided to co-found a Star Trek club and you've dressed up like that for like, it's not that cool. It's very not.
I would have thought it was cool.
Thank you. But I kind of want to sometimes like reach out to that nerdy teenage kid and be like, good for you. Don't reject her. Embrace her.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Don't care what other people think.
That's right.
If you love it, you do it.
That's right.
If you're not hurting anybody, do it.
So, like, you said your family kind of got into it together. But in terms of, like, the themes, the stories, the characters, what is it that drew you into that, you know, many decades later, you're collecting 98 spaceship models still?
Apart from being, like, a lover of sci-fi, I think it was also the thing about humanity bettering itself. Money doesn't exist anymore in that future. People do stuff because they actually want to better themselves at being something.
There's always an education or a science mission attached to all of these stories, right?
I think money ruins a lot of things. I think people get into jobs that they don't necessarily is them as a person, but because it pays a lot of money. Like, say if you're a surgeon, for example, and you think, but you're not really doing that because you're a healer. You're doing that because it'll make a lot of money.
Status, money.
So when you look at things like Star Trek, no one's starving. Like, if people wanted to connect, you could teleport to them instantly. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing that's destroying the Earth. But then at the same time, too, what I loved about it is that aliens would be a substitute for racism.
So there's parables, right, about...
Exactly.
How they are kind of doing better than us, but it's really a reflection on, like, the real Earth timeline and how we haven't been so good to us. And I guess, like, the harmonious, like, not always harmonious, you know, the
No. There was always, you know, there's always something.
And
there was, yeah, exactly.
The Klingons.
Yeah. And even between humans still, there was always problems. Like, nothing was perfect. You know, but I think it was better than the road we're going down now.
Yeah. Do you feel like the trajectory that those shows follow is a direct follow-on from, like, our times, or is it an alternate?
I would think it was an alternate. But that being said, I've just been taking a lot of negative media. And as much as I try myself to stop doing that, you know, I keep watching a lot of the suffering in the world.
Yes.
And so I think that's why I watch Star Trek too, to kind of even just balance that out. And I think it's funny because Gene Roddenberry actually said, you know, people are always talking about colonizing Mars. And he goes, what right have we got to go out into the universe and try to meet other species where we can't even get along on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's so true. And I think, you know, when people talk about colonizing Mars or that kind of, I'm like, you can't even get colonizing in the world right.
It's very ambitious. Arrogant? I don't know what...
I think it's a bit of both. Sometimes arrogance can be good because it could bring something about.
Uh-huh.
But, Yeah, I think too, what is even happening though, we're not even included in all the decision makings. So Elon Musk with his satellite, and if you look at how we're surrounding the Earth now with all this junk, like we're not even going to be able to get off the Earth because having to work out the mathematical equations just to get through all the junk that's flying around there, you know, it won't be 7 billion people that'll be leaving the Earth. You know, it'll be a very select few. If it ever happened.
Is it almost like this idealized situation where it's like, oh, look, we're able to get through all this nonsense in Star Trek and actually kind of live fairly okay out there?
I think
so,
yeah.
It's like, wouldn't that be nice? Oh, that's a nice little fantasy. Oh, how lovely.
It's a nice little fantasy, yeah.
There's a lot of allegories and symbolism in the Star Trek world that have resonance with the colonization story. Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, was actually inspired by Captain Cook's voyages on the Endeavor, right?
Yes.
As a First Nations person, as someone who made a documentary called Looky Looky, Here Comes Cookie, as a Star Trek fan, how do you process all that? That something that you love is also inspired by this colonization story.
You know, you got James Cook, James Kirk, Enterprise, Endeavor. Yeah. You know, when I learned that, it threw me. Like, I wasn't disgusted or anything like that. I was just kind of like, oh,
really? Were you surprised that you couldn't see it yourself?
No, I wasn't surprised because what Gene Roddenberry was doing was he took the best of Cook. He took the journey, exploration. You know, he wasn't putting in the genocide or everything that came afterwards. And he makes a note about them not to disturb, you know, the prime director.
When crew members meet or they encounter a new species that they've never met before, the prime directive is this rule where, like, it's like, do no harm, don't make contact.
We'd be living in a very different world if that had happened with, you know, British imperialism. Like I said, with the Next Generation, you had the Borg who were going around assimilating everybody. So we know who that's an allegory for, right? Colonization, you know, we will add your technology to our own and, you know, we'll kind of, you will become part of the collective.
Yeah, you'll lose your identity.
Colonization, imperialism is the Borg. So Gene Roddenberry understood that. And so in terms of that, there was that compassion about it. And even if you look at the original series, it had the first interracial kiss that ever happened on American television between Kirk and Uhura. Despite the backlash that happened over that, it was a man who had values and he stood up for what he believed in. And, you know, there was a lot of networks banned Star Trek then because of that.
Do you think that there's kind of like, it's a response to the colonization story and maybe an attempt to repair, I don't know if that's the right word, but to make something different from it?
I don't know if it was an attempt to repair. I think maybe he was inspired by reading the journals, but then at the same time he saw so many things that had gone wrong in the world. He's also lives in a country where the Native Americans, you know, saw what's happened there with them. So, you know, I'm sure he would have seen the parallels between Native Americans and Native Australians.
What are the moments where you find yourself reaching for a Star Trek series to rewatch?
If I've got time, I'll watch it.
Is that the thing that you kind of go for the most of everything? Like if you had a choice between what's on TV now or, you know, rewatching a series?
Yeah, well, you know what's really stupid is that I'll log into Netflix and watch Voyager and I own all of them on DVD. It could be saving me streaming money, God.
Why are you doing that, Stephen?
Because I think I'm having to get out, get the case, find the episode, put it in the player, press play. You know, but at least the one thing with the DVDs, I got the special features, so yeah, that's good.
Who was your favourite captain?
I think Janeway.
Captain Janeway? Why is that?
There was a strength about her. I mean, all the captains, they all had a strength, but there was something extra about Janeway. And I don't know whether it's because you never saw women really in those positions or making those decisions. Well, it's kind of my first time seeing that. She had such a strong will about her.
You're relieved.
Captain, what are you doing?
I'm running a little experiment of my own. Red alert!
Captain, one of the aliens has just entered the bridge.
Understood.
We're less than 1,000,000 kilometers from the pulsars. We must change course immediately to avoid being caught in their gravity.
No, keep going.
This is a far more reckless course of action than I've come to expect from you, Captain.
It certainly is.
Captain Catherine Janeway, played by Kate Mulgrew. I always thought she had such a steeliness about it, and she always had that Catherine Hepburn-esque kind of vibe to her.
Yes.
The upswept hair and maybe the cheekbones.
The voice, maybe even.
And the voice and the delivery. But I always felt like she reminded me of that in a good way, but she just had that presence. I gotta say, I'm not gonna be very original. My favorite captain is always gonna be Jean-Luc Picard. If you think about Sir Patrick Stewart and how he played Jean-Luc Picard on what could have been and was oftentimes a really silly show, but that man can just bring gravitas and seriousness and acting to whatever role he took. And he was a, you know, Shakespearean trained actor. And back when he took that role, I think he was a bit like, why am I doing this? It's a bit dumbing down, all that stuff. But year after year, even in Picard, I'm watching him, and he's like so much older now in that series. Like, there can be something so dumb happening. Honestly, just so dumb happening. But he will just act the hell out of a line which could be so hammy in anybody else's hands. But in Patrick Stewart's manner, he's able to get everything over the line.
We're out here to explore, to make contact with other life forms, to establish peaceful relations, but not to interfere. And absolutely not to destroy. Yet look at what we have just done.
He's just such an amazing actor. I think he carries so much of that Next Generation series with that gravitas.
I think he said no at first. I think he did think it might be silly.
He had to be convinced.
Yeah.
You ended up on Black Comedy writing a few Star Trek-inspired sketches, right?
Yes.
What were they like?
They were called Star Blacks.
Yeah.
I was basically Spock. I think I was Dr. Black. And they were just really silly ones. This is how silly they were. You know, they were getting sucked into a big black hole. They had to eject the warp core and cause an explosion to break free of the, you know.
But that's a classic.
That's a classic Star Trek.
They can do that. And, you know, they can travel through space. They can warp through space. But you know what they can't get right, Stephen? Is their electrical wiring. Because it's always sparking up a storm every time.
Yeah.
And at this point, I feel like when there's sparks on the bridge, that that's got to be inside joke. Because you cannot be so advanced in technology and still not get the insulation on your electricity right. Like, that just doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Exactly. It's always
got to be some kind of inquiry to that.
Yeah.
Some quality inquiry. You are not just into Star Trek and sci-fi, but you're also into superheroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's move to that now. Who are your favorite superheroes and why?
Superman is my number one.
Okay.
The Man of Steel. But that's because he was kind of the first superhero. Like, when I was a child in Cloncurry, you know, I remember tying a towel around my neck with pegs and jumping from couch to couch. And that's one of my earliest memories, doing that kind of stuff. And I think it's always about that thing of achieving more than what we are, of taking flight, literally. But it's also what he, you know, stands for in a lot of ways, which I kind of revisit in my older years, I must admit.
Oh, yeah? Like, Superman is your favorite?
Yeah.
Of the Supermans, who is your favorite Superman?
I mean, I have to go Christopher Reeve.
Yeah. It's a classic from the 1980s.
From the 80s, yeah. And, I'll still chuck on the original every now and again.
So here you are, a big superhero comic fan. Superman is DC, right?
Yes.
But you're now part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
As Carlo, the Grandmaster's cousin, and Thor Ragnarok. What was it like to experience that huge, big budget movie kind of production as opposed to, you know, a scrappy ABC comedy?
Oh, you saw the money. You saw the money.
Yeah. Where'd you see the money at?
When I went for a costume fitting. The first time, I remember walking into this warehouse and seeing all these costumes for all the extras and actors. And the team of, like, seamstresses, like, sewing away. It was huge. And then you go onto the set, and you think of the set you were working on, and then you look at this set, and it's crazy.
Like, night and day.
Night and day, yeah.
Who were you the most excited to speak to on that set in the MCU?
It was Taika. You know, it's funny, I was fine talking to Chris Hemsworth, Jeff Goldblum, Rachel House, but Taika, I didn't want to speak because I'd be worried I'd sound like an idiot. Which is a shame.
You did eventually speak, I hope.
No, we did, but I was kind of filtering when I was talking to Taika. He's the person I should feel most comfortable with. Maybe that's how I need to look at it and analyse why it was like that. But when I saw Boy, that was the first time I stumbled across Taika, and that was just by chance because that I would go to the movies all the time, and I saw this movie, Boy, and I just thought it was the most beautiful movie, but funny as well. And I think I saw a lot of what I wanted to do and what kind of stories I wanted to write. And so it meant so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because the other guys are all actors, so I see them playing characters all the time. Whereas Taika, I think because he wrote, directed and acted in, I saw a lot more of him. And I saw a lot of parallels.
Stephen, we've had a fantastic conversation about sci-fi, superheroes, meeting your idols. We're coming to the end of this fantastic conversation, but on Stop Everything, we always like to roll out my little soapbox for my guest critics. You know, they get to jump on board and have their say So yeah. Over to you, Stephen Oliver. What do you want to get off your chest?
I can hear it now. People are going to say, stop living in the past. But I was thinking about how last year I was up in Townsville and I was hosting an event called Corroboree as part of the North Australian Festival of Art. I'd put up on my Facebook page inviting people to come down and join in and hang out with us and join the festivities and share culture and that kind of stuff. The amount of racism I got for inviting people to come and share in our culture was sickening. There was a question like, oh, do any of you people work? Literally, when I'm there for work.
You're doing a job.
They're like, do you people realise you're in Australia? When I'm asking them to come join at the North Australian Festival of Arts. You know, or people like making jab like, oh, sorry, I've got to work, unlike some people. It's always the same old, you're either a drunk, you're either a thief, or you're either lazy. And it's online, but, you know, people would never say that to you in your face. So I thought I would share a spoken word piece that I've shared quite a bit, but if that proves anything, like, I need to share it even more. And this is the other crazy thing. People are saying, like, oh, you know, good way to be divisive. You're dividing the country. But I'm literally inviting people to come and share in culture are accusing me of being divisive.
That makes no sense.
But it's because they're deflecting. They don't want to feel like they're the ones dividing the country. And I'm sorry, but the media, as soon as you go left and right, then you've already caused a division. Left, right, far left, far right, extreme right. And the divisions, they're growing. And yet they go to Aboriginal people, you're dividing the country.
So in response to that, Stephen, you created an artistic response.
I did. And I feel like I need to point out, which I shouldn't have to, but when I say our at the end of the poem, I do mean everybody. Because even when I've shared this poem, people started accusing me of saying our as just being Aboriginal people.
Okay, well, over to you, Stephen Oliver.
I'm a black fellow. Not a drunk, criminal, uneducated, unemployed, welfare-dependent slack fella. And if you try to tell me different, well, you might just get a smack fella. Not that I condone violence. I just don't condone silence. And when you try to tell me about what it means to be an Aborigine with those stupid-ass joke stereotypes and Discovery Channel mentalities, well, I'm afraid I have to speak up and let you know about me. See, I ain't what you see in your travel magazine. And I haven't got the look of your history book. Noble? Pff, maybe. Savage? No. Unless you're talking about the words and the way that they flow, but this isn't about style. It's about attitudes. It's about people who formulate their ill-informed views, who switch on the TV and then suddenly, out of the blue, they know all about me. Oh, he comes from that race involved in that car chase. It's such a disgrace what they do to the place. I mean, seriously, in this day and age, you want to learn about me, you need to learn to engage. Don't base your decisions on things that you see. Make up your mind by talking to me. I won't rob you or beg it. I won't try to fight you. But if you're a man and you're hot, I might like you. Yes, that's right. I'm single. I am. I'm using my rhymes to try and get me a man. But enough about that. Because I'm here to teach, to beseech, not preach about the heights we could reach. If you stood by our sides and simply just talked of some of the times in our footsteps you walked, then maybe you'd see we're not young and free. We're ancient and chained from the sayings that remain from a past that's never been dealt with properly because people don't get off their ass. Instead, they'll read articles, switch on the news, and somehow through media the lies become truth. Just like when people see a drunk black man on the street and somehow from that black man becomes B. But the drunk white man who stumbles and falls, oh, he's not a reflection of a race at all. So open your mind, because perception's a lie. Learn what it is to not see with your eyes, because I'm a black fella. Not a drunk, criminal, uneducated, unemployed, welfare-dependent slack fella, and I'm trying to put your minds on the right track, fellas. So question yourselves. Challenge ideals, start a revolution. Are you part of a world's problem or the solution? Because whether or not I'm right or whether or not I'm wrong, inevitably, all of this, it's about our song.
Oh boy, Stephen Oliver, thank you so much. That is an absolute honor and a gift and a privilege for you to share that with Stop Everything. Stephen Oliver, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you jump on board as guest critic for Stop Everything. Where can we catch you next?
I'll be up in Darwin next month for the Gamelung Festival doing a comedy show called Big Black Dot.
Okay.
So come along, check it out.
We'll put a link to that event in our show notes. And Stephen Oliver, I now know who I could reach out to if I have a Star Trek Next Generation thing that I need to share.
Exactly.
I'm going to go straight to you, Stephen Oliver. Straight
if
to you.
If you want to share that high school project, send me a copy so I can have a read.
Okay. You've been listening to Stop Everything with very special guest Stephen Oliver. Thanks so much for taking the time, and we'd love it if you could help us get the word out. If you know someone who loves getting the week in pop culture discourse demystified, clarified, distilled, all those big words, tap share in your podcast app now and send this episode to them. They can enjoy it while they're out for a walk, out grocery shopping, whatever they're doing. Thank you so much. This episode of Stop Everything was made on the land of the Kulin Nation on Whadjuk Noongar country and on the land of the Muwinina people from country around Nipaluna, as well as the land of the Turrbal people. Stop Everything is produced by Sarah Mashman. Our executive producer is Tom Wright. Thanks so much, and I'll catch you next time.